Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great lives all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
So great to be back on air. Gerald Brown, got Fife Dog on air on time, a.k.a. The man is the legendary, Money Morphosis, waiting for it, Fife Dog in the house. Where's the applause? Are we a little behind? Can we give him a round of applause, a regular round of applause? There we go, a little bit faster. Fife, what's going on, buddy? How's everything?
Chilling, man. What's popping?
I can't call it, man. Definitely something. So much has been going on. We got so much to talk about. You know, it was a little awkward not being on air last week, and so thus, you know, you got so much that's piled up compared to what transpired last week. You got this week, all the stuff that's transpired. So we got so much to talk about. I want to get your thoughts on some of the breaking news that reportedly the Philadelphia Eagles will trade LeSean McCoy to the Buffalo Bills for linebacker Kiko Alonso. Fife, Kiko Alonso for LeSean McCoy, your thoughts on that? Because you follow the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not feeling it at all. But, you know, Coach Kelly, he doesn't really care what anybody thinks. He's going to run it his way, and that's the bottom line. And we saw this last year when he got rid of DeSean Jackson. So, you know, it's a new day in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if it was the best thing to have happened, but we'll see what happens. But I'm not happy about it at all.
Yeah, then Drew Rosenhaus has actually come out and said that there is posted something on Twitter indicating that as of right now, he said, I just spoke with the Eagles organization. There is no trade for LeSean at this time. There have been there have been discussions, but nothing finalized, as we know that things cannot be finalized until next week, when thus the free agency period opens up, and I'm really, really looking forward to that. And anybody that is a fan of just football in general, free agency period, it's totally different than what you see in baseball and basketball. These guys make deals right on the spot. They know that the money is not going to be there, so thus free agency will be a frenzy starting next week, so we'll definitely look at that. We're also going to talk about really the NBA and stuff that's transpiring with the NBA. Get your thoughts on just really James Harden not playing tonight. And just, again, opening up perhaps the conversation to include certain other guys like a Russell Westbrook, LeBron James to the MVP talk. We got March Madness right around the corner. We'll be talking with – first up, we'll be talking to Vashtar Hurt in the Vashtar Report. We'll get her thoughts on just really this big story with Duke University and Rashid Suleiman, alleged sexual assault case, allegations that transpire. We'll find out what is the sort of 4-1 down there in Durham, North Carolina, in the Raleigh area. We'll also talk with Cole Muzio of DraftTech.com, get his thoughts and opinions on the feedback from the scouting combine, as guys are starting out to make some visits. Jameis Winston is down visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers today. So we'll get Cole's thoughts on that, as well as some of the moves of guys being released, not being franchised, and thus deepening the free agency pool. We'll talk with Jake Fisher a little bit later and talk about really March Madness and what you really need to understand about March Madness. I believe it's going to start next week. You want to focus more than ever this year on some of these small mid-major schools who can actually come into the tournament and beat some of the big-time schools. So we'll get Jake's thoughts and opinions on who we need to be watching for and who could be really some of the surprises in the upcoming NCAA tournament. We'll also talk with Janisa Adams-Ginyard. Janisha is actually a stunt woman. She's a professional wrestler, and she's also a part of the show called Coaching Bad with Ray Lewis on Spike TV every Sunday nights at 8 p.m. We'll talk to her about really just, again, the landscape of coaching and also get her thoughts and opinions on how wrestlers look at some of these fake fights that take place in the NBA. I would say football, but it's a little bit different, a little bit more physical. 347-324-5839. Fife, Chicago Bulls, they lose. Derrick Rose, everybody was talking about that. It was a lot of conversation centered around the fact that this is perhaps the end of the Bulls. Somehow, some way, they look like they'd be able to manage because he was allegedly going to be back in 4 to 6 weeks. Wasn't that serious of a surgery. But now they lose Jimmy Butler for 3 to 6 weeks. How much will the loss of Butler hurt the Chicago Bulls, Fife?
I mean, I think the chemistry hurts more than anything else. I mean, it's already a big blow when you hear about Derrick Rose, and then at least you get a little sigh of relief understanding that it wasn't that bad of a surgery. Then you lose his backcourt mate, who obviously was having the best season of his career, and that's just a huge blow. Then there's talks of Tibbs and management and not seeing eye to eye, not getting along, Tibbs possibly not being back next season. So I think the chemistry is already dead. Because I was really expecting big things from the Chicago Bulls, but maybe they can at least make the playoffs, but I don't see them going far at all.
Yeah. And then, Fife, also some news that took place, and it was kind of a head-scratcher because I couldn't put my finger on it at all, Fife. I'm trying to understand and completely figure out. The Denver Nuggets decided to fire Brian Shaw today, which is kind of, you know, it's just so late in the equation, late in the game, and I didn't understand that move. You know, in terms of the fact is that we saw that we saw JaVale McGee was moved. We saw Aaron Afalo that was moved. There have been some conversations in regards to centered around that, you know, Brian Shaw really was struggling with a lot of guys' lack of professionalism. And thus, at this late juncture, for them to pull the cord, to pull the plug, so to speak. How surprised are you that the Nuggets decided to fire Shaw with so little left in the season?
I'm not surprised at all, being that Afalo was moved, being that he and Andre Miller didn't hit it off too well, he was moved, and JaVale McGee, well, I mean, I wasn't surprised he was moved, but it just seemed like things were not coming to fruition in Denver, and that hence the reason why I'm not surprised that Brian Shaw was fired, even though there's only a month or so to go in the season. But it just wasn't coming together, and I guess they figured they might as well make a move now and get ready for next season. And, you know, so I wasn't surprised at all.
Yeah, I was surprised because, like I said before, the timing of the whole equation. I mean, if you were going to fire him, I said, well, maybe you want to bring somebody in there perhaps at the halfway point at All-Star Weekend. And then when they decided to start moving guys out like a JaVale McGee, Aaron Afalo, you saw the handwriting on the wall, which was kind of surprising because I thought at that moment it seemed apparent that they were going to say at least, look, we're going to stay with him and we're going to stay with Shaw and basically get rid of all the other individuals. So I was very surprised by that. And then at this late juncture, the decision to make that move there, I just don't understand that at all. But something, Fife, James Harden in the game, and I thought that was one of the most outstanding games we have seen in quite some time, the Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavaliers, with the Rockets pulling out an overtime victory over the Cavs. Fife, James Harden has really been playing unbelievable this season, and clearly he's been one of those people that you can say is an MVP candidate. Did he hurt his chances of winning the MVP by getting suspended for tonight for kicking LeBron James in that game?
I don't think so. He just made a mistake, you know, but it has nothing to do with how he's been playing. And I think when he comes back, he's going to play with even more of a chip on his shoulder, and we'll see what happens from there, but I don't think he hurt his chances at all. The only people that's going to hurt his chances is Stephen Curry, Westbrook, and maybe LeBron. But the way James Harden has been playing, I really don't think it hurt his chances at all. It was just a silly mistake, and he's paying for it right now.
Yeah. And then also, Fi, if you look at the fact that the Los Angeles Clippers are getting news that Blake Griffin could possibly be back at the end of this week here, they have been able to, you know, keep their head above water. And, Fi, it's been very surprising because at the center of it, you know the usual suspects. You got a la Chris Paul. But DeAndre Jordan has played unbelievable. Now that they're getting back Blake Griffin to throw into that equation, I'm kind of on the fence of perhaps putting the Clippers back into the championship conversation, possibly. Agree or disagree? Is it time to put them back into that conversation?
It's difficult to say that because they're out West and the West is just so tough. But I think anyhow you have Chris Paul on your team, the way he plays, never takes a night off, so to speak. I think they should always be in the conversation unless they're just, you know, on the bottom of the totem pole, which hasn't really been the case. As long as you have him playing well and DeAndre Jordan's coming into his own, and if he could make a free throw or two, you really could put him in the conversation. But it's still a little because they're out West. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think with Chris Paul at the helm, they should always at least be in the conversation, top five team in the West.
Yeah, 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Now, Fife, I know we had talked about Derrick Rose and clearly he's expected back, but Fife, I'm having a hard time because 4 to 6 weeks puts a guy like Rose really with a week going into the playoffs. I can't see him coming back, playing and returning before the playoffs at 100%. And Fife, it just seems like it's too much of a gamble and the expectations. And I know that you said realistically, them to win a playoff series would be satisfying. But Fife, to expect him to come back and be 100% going into the playoffs with so little wiggle room in terms of to get himself prepared for the playoffs, I think that anybody that is expecting him is not an accurate assessment of what realistically you should expect from Derrick Rose.
No, not at all, especially being former MVP of the league. And I didn't say it was expected or satisfying. I didn't say it was satisfying because just when you hear about the injury, another injury to Derrick Rose, that tells you right there the season is pretty much done. You know what I mean? But him coming back with a week left right before the playoffs, I don't think that helps the situation either. And I think the competitor that he is, I don't even think he'd probably want to do that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're talking about a guy like, you know, like Tom Thibodeau, his job is on the line. And the expectations are, you know, at least getting to the conference finals, let alone the championship. Now, we also saw another point guard in Rajon Rondo who went out West and reportedly was really setting himself up to get a max contract. But thus, he had the situation of falling out with Rick Carlisle. And let's be honest, things hasn't turned out very well, like expected, in Dallas with Rajon. Fife, has he hurt his chances of getting that contract, that max contract moving forward? I know that, you know, we had that situation where Eric Bledsoe, who was nowhere in the world that he was going to get that max money, and lo and behold, once we saw that Minnesota stepped up and thus put the pressure on Phoenix to re-sign him, he got his money. But can we go forward and think and expect, just expecting that possibly a guy like Rondo could get a max contract going forward?
I don't think he hurt his chances by arguing with his coach. I think more so he hurt his chances because the numbers are totally opposite of what they were when he was playing in Boston or back East. But like you said, who knows? If Bledsoe could get his money, Rajon would probably get his money as well. But the numbers are definitely, definitely opposite from what it was when he was playing in Boston. And if he doesn't get his money, I think it'll be because of that, if anything.
Yeah, I don't think he can. I mean, clearly his weaknesses were really exposed when he went forward to the Western Conference. And clearly, let's be honest, he's a guy that cannot shoot. It's really been difficult out there for him. And when you're not a guard that can be able to shoot from the perimeter, that is clearly lacking. So I think he was overexposed, and I'd be very surprised. I mean, I don't know if a team like New York or the L.A. Lakers are willing to invest a lot of money into a guy that realistically the market will not be that strong for him, just because the fact is that the point guard position is a very, very deep and strong position. Fife, you know, in New York City, we lost one of our own, especially Queens native as yourself. We lost Anthony Mason, former Knickerbocker, this past Saturday, early Saturday morning. I believe it was Saturday or Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, to congestive heart failure. He had some surgeries. Your thoughts on just really Anthony Mason and what you remember about him playing?
Oh, man, I just remember him being that Madison Square goon that we all love and praise in New York City. You know what I mean? Not to mention he's from Queens. He went to the same high school I went to. So, you know, I was a huge fan. I was a huge supporter. And on the strength of him, I supported his sons while they're playing as well. You know what I mean? But he's definitely going to be missed when it comes to New York basketball, New York City basketball, whether professionally, street, whatever the case may be. I'm still shocked, you know, off of the reports that he had a heart attack and so forth. And now that he's gone, it's just crazy, man. There's been a lot of deaths lately that's just been crazy, man, when it comes to basketball, especially. You know what I mean? So, God be with him and his family, man. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it's been so much passing from Jerome Kersey, Dean Smith, Jerry Tarkanian. We lost a lot, and I think really to sum it all up is, like I said, this weekend, you know, life is so short that, you know what, each and every single day you need to really value it and appreciate it, because you just never know. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, again, Knicks fans and in general really value some of these guys, because, again, the Knicks are really an atrocious organization. They haven't had so much success since those guys have been gone, but yet we just seems like those guys are not being embraced back into the Knicks family because they're such a strong part of the history. We don't need to check that number. That's Vashti Hurd joining us with the Vashti Report here on the Bottomline Sports Show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing fine, Vashti. Your Duke Blue Devils are at the center of a really ugly allegation and stuff that we understood prior, before we understood the situation transpiring with Rashid Suleiman becoming the first Duke player to ever be suspended. And then the Duke University student newspaper reported that they actually, the coaching staff and athletic administration, knew about the sexual assault allegations levied against Rashid Suleiman, which thus, I think 6 days later, led to his dismissal. What has been the reaction to Coach K and Duke University sort of remaining quiet on this whole matter? What has been the sort of what has been the reaction around in the North Carolina area?
I mean, I haven't heard a lot of talk about it, murmurings, but not a huge uproar. You know, basketball is God here, and so, you know, you might have a couple Carolina fans throw a couple jabs, but then, you know, you can have Duke fans talk about what's going on with the Carolina program. I have a source within the Duke program, and I was told that, because as soon as this hit the news, I made the phone call, and I was like, look, what's going on with this? I was told that Rashid Suleiman's dismissal from the team had nothing to do with these sexual assault allegations. Now, according to Duke Chronicle's report, the basketball staff was informed about this last year, I think in March of 2014. And because they were just mere allegations, or the word that I heard used, quote-unquote, rumors, and that nothing formal was filed, it was basically there was a chain of, oh, well, I heard somebody else say this, and then, oh, I heard somebody else say this, and then the Duke Chronicle kind of ran with the story from there. So none of the quote-unquote accusers have come out and said anything. I believe it was one of the girls' friends heard it at the retreat and then told another friend, and then it got to somebody in the basketball office. So we all know what happens when stories go down a chain like that. So I don't know how seriously the Duke program took that allegation, given the fact that it was just that, and there was no formal report filed. Neither of the two girls who supposedly accused Rashid Suleiman of sexual assault, rape, it's a word that I saw used, came out and formally filed a complaint. And so without that, I don't think that Duke took it seriously. And I think it's important to understand this was prior to Ray Rice. Ray Rice has really made things, made the sports community and the community at large kind of put a spotlight on domestic abuse issues. And so I think that maybe if this might have happened post-Ray Rice, then it might have, you know, it might have been something else. They might have taken a different course of action. But because this is before the heightened sensitivity in the athletic community surrounding this topic, that they just said, okay, well, this was a rumor and we're going to roll with it. We're going to just say, okay, until something concrete is being said, we're not going to give it much credence. Now, my source told me that Suleiman was dismissed because he had an issue with coaches. He was verbally, he went after coaches. I heard John Shire's name mentioned specifically. He had altercations with coaches as well as players. And the night before he was dismissed, Duke lost to Notre Dame. And I was told that he had an altercation in the locker room. I was not told who it was between, but apparently there was an altercation in the locker room. And Coach K said enough is enough and dismissed him from the team. My source said that he's a good player, and everybody knows he's a good player, but he was becoming a quote, and this is a quote from my source, a cancer in the locker room, and that team chemistry was better without him. And so they decided to get rid of him. And it's not something that just happened this season. Apparently this has been an issue with Suleiman all ongoing, that his attitude wasn't as good as, you know, Coach K would like it to be. And Coach K isn't going to stand for anybody popping their gums at him. So, you know, according to my source, that's what happened. It had nothing to do with the sexual assault allegation.
Mm-hmm. Vashti Hurt here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, 347-324-5839.
The American Athletic Conference has Tulsa, Southern Miss, Temple, Cincinnati, all with at least 20 wins. How realistic is it that all four schools will get into the tournament?
I think it's very realistic, and I think they all will, and I think they all should. You know, it's not easy getting 20 wins in college basketball. They all have decent records within their conference. I think all of the schools except for Tulsa is like 14-2, and everybody else has 11-5 record, and they kind of have beaten up on each other. So they show that they're good teams, they're good quality teams. I believe that they deserve to be in that field, and I think that the committee will agree with that.
Yeah. Now, Vashti, we look at the fact is that St. John's picked up a very big win last weekend versus Georgetown Hoyas to get to 20 wins. And we do understand 20 wins really, and yesteryear really meant something. But you do have a lot of schools that really play sort of these cupcake schedules and you load up. And then if you're not playing at a powerhouse conference, now we do know that St. John's is actually a part of the Big East, a.k.a. would be a power conference. How many games will they need, St. John's, that is? They're 9-7 in conference play. How many games do you feel they'll need in their conference tournament in the upcoming week in order to make it to the NCAA tournament?
That 9-7 Big East record, that really hurts. That really hurts. And I think two things that they'll need. I think that they need to win against Villanova on March 7th, or at least have a good showing in that game. I don't think they need to get blown out by Villanova, and a win would definitely help their campaign. And then at least one win. If they beat Villanova, they need at least one win in the Big East tournament. If they lose to Villanova badly, I would think they would need at least 2-3 wins in the Big East tournament to solidify a spot in March Madness.
Mm-hmm. How many teams will the Big East get into the NCAA tournament?
You know, I think realistically they could get five or six, depending on how St. John's does. I know they have four, definitely. And so I think we can see five. I can see five or six, probably five, though. But the thing that impresses me is that, you know, everybody thought that it was going to be the death of the Big East when Louisville and Syracuse left, but they're actually really holding their own, in my opinion, as you know, as a formidable conference in college basketball.
Yeah, it's just been a lot of settling. I mean, again, you don't have those really powerhouse teams there, but, you know, Vashti, this is perhaps one of the best times of the year. You know, you have the March Madness, and clearly it drives the whole basketball landscape for the whole month of March, and then we go right into playoffs in the NBA. Aside from the usual suspects, give us a surprise team in the ACC that you will predict will get in that large bid.
You know what, I thought about this. I really think NC State deserves to go to the tournament. They have some quality wins. They beat Duke. They've beaten Louisville. They've beaten UNC. And those are the top teams in the ACC. And so, you know, if they don't deserve to get in, I don't know who does. I would pick them over Pitt and Miami. They both have similar conference records. But because of those huge wins, I would have to go with NC State. And they also play UVA tough. They only lost to UVA by 4 points. I don't think they should be on the bubble.
Good point. Now, can you please give us your batch five?
All right, here we go. I am going to go with Kentucky, of course, because they're still undefeated. And I hate saying Kentucky every week, but I have to give props when props are due. When the beginning of the season started, I was like, no way this team goes undefeated. I don't even care whether they're in the weak SEC or not. There always seems to be a trap game, and they just haven't fallen into the trap yet. Whether that'll help or hurt going into the NCAA tournament, I don't know. But I think, you know, I'm always of the mindset that a good loss will help humble guys, and especially with the young team that Kentucky has. But I got to go with Kentucky. I still like Maryland. Maryland is still doing a great job. I'm impressed with how they're handling that switch over to their new conference. This Wisconsin, they always play tough. Arizona, and then lastly, Utah.
Yeah. Vashti, you know what? I'm hoping that you're taking this week to get you a lot of rest and relaxation, because I'm hoping that we can really get a chance to talk with you a lot as we close in on March Madness and find out some of the teams that you're predicting and expecting to be able to make some noise in the NCAA tournament, teams that get upset or really need help in terms of the conference tournament. So I'm hoping that we get a chance to really talk to you moving forward as we really need that Vashti college basketball insight as we close in on March Madness.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be at the ACC tournament all next week, and I'm always available to talk to you guys. Part two on Saturday. You trying to make a side bet?
Whatever.
I'm still mad, I guess.
Vashti, that did not sound confident at all, Fife. Malik, that
not
was not
at
confident
all.
At all. No confidence whatsoever, Fife. Somebody would have said that about me, asking me about Louisville. I would say, you know what? Hey, let's bring it.
North Carolina beat the brakes off of Georgia Tech tonight, so maybe they're trying to go on that upswing. I don't know.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yes.
Can I tell you a secret? Duke is not Georgia Tech. That's all I know.
That is true. It's true. So, yeah. But, I mean, it should give them some help playing at the Dean Dome. And so, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
oh, let me ask you this, Fife. I'm sorry. I don't mean to take over, but I wanted to ask because people here in North Carolina, and Gerald, please give me y'all's opinion, too, because people here in North Carolina are calling for Roy Williams' job.
I want to make sure this, and oh man, I wish we had a little bit more time on this, but yeah, you know, Vashti, remember we talked about this last year in terms of perhaps flying under the radar, and I think that with the whole situation with the scandal, with the cheating scandal, I was kind of feeling that some way, somehow, he would perhaps being pushed out the door politely, not to cause really an uproar in terms of that, but the team and the program has been mediocre. I just thought that perhaps that, you know what, they might decide to push him out rather than fire him. And not have that stain on their record. But we had said this last year. I thought that, Roy Williams was under some fire. And, you know, could you see it? Could you imagine perhaps maybe a guy like Shaka Smart or Brad Stevens returning and taking the reins and taking over that UNC family, doing
that?
That's a
good question. That's a good question.
Go get Larry Brown.
Well, I mean.
That would be a good one.
You just never know,
like
though.
You would get Larry Brown.
No, I think that's come and gone.
I thought that he would be. I don't think that, but based on the allegations as far as the cheating and the paper classes, I don't even think that, you know, they took that road of we're going to not say anything about it and just wait till it dies down, and people really aren't talking about it anymore, but people are questioning Roy's coaching skills, and I agree. I mean, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it, Gerald, but Carolina fans are now coming for him, and that's new.
That's definitely dwindled, but I think the biggest thing that has fallen off is the recruiting. He hasn't adapted to the one and done. He hasn't.
Yeah. It's been tough, but, I mean, hey, you just never know. Hey, Vashti, I always appreciate you. Definitely look forward to talking to you next week as we close in on March Madness.
Certainly. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Anytime. The Vashti Report. Vashti Report, lovely Vashti Hurt, giving us the 411. Everything associated with college basketball, and she knows her stuff, you know. Speaking of knowing their stuff, let's keep it moving forward with a gentleman that knows his stuff, DraftTech.com, Cole Muzio, joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Cole, good evening.
Hey, Gerald, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I got the legendary Fife Dog hanging out with me as well. Cole, let's get right into it. What type of impact will the current players that were not franchise tagged with the franchise tag on Monday and upcoming free agency, which starts next week, what type of impact will that have on the draft moving forward?
You know, it certainly has a lot of impact, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, but yeah, I feel like DraftTech is the best draft site out there because we've got an analyst for every team looking at every move and evaluating how that's going to affect team needs. But, you know, if we're specifically looking at the top of the draft, because a lot of these are going to be, you know, how it affects teams, you know, boards in rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. But if you're looking at the top of the draft, you really are looking at a handful of players and a handful of teams that this is really going to have a significant impact on. And I'm really looking at, you know, the Jaguars and the Raiders picking at 3 and 4, who are going to spend a lot of money in free agency. You know, who lands Sue? You know, that's really the big sweepstakes here that could affect the draft and potentially determine the landing spot of a guy that I think is the surest thing in the draft, and that's Leonard Williams. You know, both Jacksonville and Oakland are going to bid for Sue. Both those teams would be thrilled if Leonard Williams from USC were available at their spot 3 or 4. So, you know, that ultimately could play out there. Also, Oakland specifically could be looking for a wide receiver. Right now we've got them taking Kevin White at number 4. You know, if they were able to get a Randall Cobb, you know, in free agency, does that affect them taking White at number 4? I'm not sure. I would think so, given the number of needs that Oakland has. You know, but, you know, Sue, you know, Randall Cobb, Jeremy Maclin, those are some guys that are really going to have an impact on the early part of the draft. You know, Julius Thomas, is, you know, and some of these other, you know, high-profile free agents, you know, they're not necessarily going to have a huge impact on the early pecking order. But those are a couple situations I think you're going to see free agency have a big impact on the early picks.
Yeah.
How big of a gap is there between quarterbacks Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota? And could you see the Buccaneers not picking Winston at this point?
Well, you know, I think I may be one of the only ones at this point, but I still have a preference for Mariota, as the more reliable prospect, the guy that I feel more comfortable betting on. You know, and I know the offense that he comes from and the knocks that are there, but, you know, this is an extremely athletic, smart kid. He's a winner. I don't think he has the ice in his veins that Winston has. I mean, I think he's just one of those that, you know, when the game is on the line, Winston finds a way to win. You know, and Mariota seems to kind of have that Manning syndrome where he produces really good teams but can't quite close the deal. But at the same time, he is a winner. He throws the football pretty darn well as well. But that said, you know, Winston does look pretty much like the sure thing at number one at this point. I get the sense also that the Bucs, you know, they're meeting with Winston. They met with him the last couple of days. And, you know, they're going to do their due diligence on him. But I think they're kind of at the point where they're going to hear what they want to hear from Winston. You know, I think they're infatuated. I think they're in love with him, kind of like the Browns were with Manziel last year. They're going to hear what they want to hear. And I see them taking him number one.
Right. Yeah, I'm hoping so because I think that, you know, I agree with you on that. But, I keep going back and something about those quarterbacks from the University of Oregon. I mean, Marcus Mariota, think about it, Joey Harrington. I mean, a lot of those quarterbacks that have come prior to that. And Harrington was not a part of that spread offense. And I think I'm a little concerned simply because we've seen RG3. We've seen a lot of these spread offensive quarterbacks really struggle going from up under the center. And, yes, I understand the guys last week, they were in T-shirts and shorts, and he goes back, he's doing it. He's not facing any type of rush whatsoever. I think it's very difficult, but, I mean, again, just based upon that, I got to see a guy that's in a pro system style, a pro system, be able to have success and be able to say that that's a better and a smoother transition. Speaking of the combine, who were your biggest winners at the combine last week?
You know, I think your biggest winner has to be Kevin White, who I mentioned earlier. You know, we've now got him going number four to the Raiders. He certainly jumped from maybe even outside of the top 10 to that number four spot. You know, a lot of people were concerned about top-end speed, but his 4.35 really stood out, silenced any doubters there. And, he's only got one big-time season, but I think with his performance at the combine, he moved ahead of Amari Cooper as a top receiver. Could go as early as four, and I think definitely now is a top 10 prospect. Other winners, I think all three of the quarterbacks, top quarterbacks, Winston, Mariota, and second rounder Brett Hundley out of UCLA, I think all of those three guys performed well. They did themselves some favors. They solidified their spots or moved up. Offensive tackle, Lyle Collins out of LSU, I think he performed very well. DJ Humphrey, so I mentioned last week, he had a very good combine, and some people are starting to put him into round one. He's really the fastest rising offensive lineman, at the top portion of the draft. On the defensive side, I think Vic Beasley showed up heavier than expected, and he also ran and performed very well. He got a 4.53. Alvin Dupree out of Kentucky, he also distinguished himself as an edge rusher. And that's a position where a lot of those guys are clumped together, and so those guys needed strong performances, and they delivered. Byron Jones and Trey Waynes, those two guys, defensive backs, they really performed well. Jones probably moving into the second round, Wayne solidifying himself as the draft's top corner. Wes Saxton, the tight end out of Alabama, and Ali Marpet out of little old Hobart, you know, those were the two under-the-radar guys, and not a whole lot of people were talking about. Marpet ran the best offensive line time. In fact, I think it was a hundredth of a second behind Jameis Winston's time.
Wow.
And so he did very well. Yeah, I think Winston more than anything, I think it confirmed he's not a dual threat quarterback. You know, he's a passer and he's a great passer. He's not a dual threat quarterback. But Marpet performed very well, and Saxton, he's one of the leading tight ends in every category. And so those were two under the radar guys that did very well. For themselves to come back.
Who are the players that left the combine needing a strong pro day?
Yeah, you know, with those guys, their stock's on the rise, you're always going to have some guys whose stock takes the hit. I think, you know, Nebraska running back Amir Abdullah, he's one that didn't run as fast as people thought he was going to, so his stock's, you know, down a little bit. Would like to see an improved time at his pro day. Shaq Thompson, the Washington linebacker, really was a disappointment. A lot of people were very high on his athleticism. He's a guy that a lot of people were seeing at different positions. I think he solidified himself that he really is a linebacker conventional there. But it was that was a disappointment. You know, he could use a better pro day. With the 4.7 time, I'm not really sure that Devin Funchess, the Michigan, you know, tweener, is really going to be able to convince scouts that he's a wide receiver, not just a wing tight end. But he'll try. You know, hopefully he gets a better pro day performance. And I think one of the biggest disappointments on at the combine was Sammy Coates, who we talked about last time. The Auburn receiver. He was disappointing, you know, because he tested well, but not spectacularly, which was what people were anticipating. I thought he was going to run in the 4.3s. He ran a 4.43, which is great, you know, particularly for a receiver of his size. But, you know, to compensate for the fact that he's not a good route runner, not doesn't have the best hands in the world, he had his pro day today. He did not test again, but I think, you know, the buzz was that he performed a little bit better running routes, catching balls. Yeah, so hopefully that improves his stock. But I think he's now probably whereas I think he could have pushed into the early part of round one, he's now probably definitely not going off the board before the Ravens at 26. I don't even know that he'll go there. I think he's probably a second-round prospect now. But those are just some of the guys I think could do better on their pro days.
DraftTech.com's Cole Musial joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Fife Dog, Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839. Yeah, it was such amazing thing. You think of Kevin White, who looks like a stud when he ran that 40, and then you had the guy that I can't remember, the cornerback or the safety that set the record, world record, I think, in the broad jump, and he pole vaulted himself, if you will, into the first round. But, you know, certain guys, like you mentioned, I looked at Randy Gregory, a guy that's out of Nebraska. Really outstanding. We know the history of Nebraska's their program, again, physical playing in that big, well, back then Big 12, but now Big 10. With Randy Gregory, he's slightly undersized. Do you see any similarities between him and Miami Dolphins' Deion Jordan, or Jordan when he was coming out as a prospect out of Oregon? Do you see any similarities between those two?
Yeah, you know, Randy Gregory's agent doesn't want to hear you say that. You know, it's one of those things where sometimes those images, those associations that you make with players, it really can stick in a GM's mind. And you know, unfortunately for Randy Gregory, you know, there really is a lot of similarities that these guys have similar frames, similar. I mean, these guys are exceptional athletes, similar amount of production in college. You know, I mean, productive but not super productive. And, you know, there's similar questions about consistency and the implications that come with that. If a guy's not consistently playing at a high level, if you see him spectacular one play and lacking the next, you know, it's a guy that you question. Does he love football? Is he aggressive? Does he, you know, is he going to go after it all the time? Can he perform at a high level in the NFL? Those are all similarities between Jordan and Gregory. You know, I think he showed up at, 235 at the Combine. And that was, you know, well under what people were expecting him to. You know, but all that said, you know, he's still an exceptional athlete. You know, Jordan ended up going number 3 right now. We've got Gregory going very high. I think our latest mock has him going to Tennessee at number 2. You know, but teams could get wary. You know, they're going to look at, you know, they're going to see Jordan, who's done almost nothing in the NFL, you know, him being undersized and questions about his motor and love of the game continue to persist. And they're going to look at Gregory and see those similarities. And so there's so little difference between these edge guys. You know, Gregory, Dante Fowler out of Florida, Shane Ray out of Missouri, Vic Beasley out of Clemson, Alvin Dupree. You know, Beasley and Dupree were some of those winners out of the combine. And it's just going to be the smallest of differences that determine who goes where. You know, all these guys are going to be off the board very early. But, yeah, you know, you're right. There's a lot of similarities there. Definitely.
Yeah, I saw that, and I said, oh, my goodness. Again, that was just really these undersized defensive linemen and really being able to wonder if they could really stand up and adapt and adjust to the pressures of playing, you know, being an every-down lineman in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he said he wants to be a linebacker. And, you know, I'm you know, to me, 6'6", it's tough to be a linebacker and be that tall. You know, I prefer a frame like a Fowler's. But at the same time, you know, he is athletic, and so somebody will take him. Somebody will take him very early, and you know, they're going to be, you know, dreaming of him having, you know, double digit sack seasons. But at the same time, you know, it'll be tough. He's very lean. He's very lean.
Well said. Definitely.
What is your updated top 10 mock draft?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything's, you know, ebbing and flowing right now. It's going to be tough to see where everything goes. You know, obviously, you know, we'll have free agency that'll solidify things a little bit more. But, you know, right now, I agree. Winston number one of the Bucks. I don't see them going in a different direction. They do seem to have reached that infatuation point with Winston. And so I think he goes there. You know, I think number two, the Titans, they could go in a number of different directions. I think that's an interesting pivot point, but I see them going conservative with Leonard Williams, who I think maybe the best overall player in the draft. Number three, I think the Jaguars ultimately go with Dante Fowler. I think he gets taken over Randy Gregory in the end is kind of your elite outside guy. You know, Williams could be inside or outside, but I think Fowler is the first one taken there. Number four, and I think probably 4 to 6 is really where you start looking for trades. You know, that's where teams start going on. Marcus Mariota's still on the board. Let's see if we can get him. You know, the Raiders have a propensity to try to move down with, you know, McKenzie looking to stockpile picks. But Kevin White, if the Raiders hold there, I think we'll go number four. You know, number five, the Redskins, you know, they could look for – that could be where Randy Gregory goes. You know, they'll look for an outside rusher, I think, at that spot. You know, they could look at Mariota. They could look at a wide receiver. But I think Gregory or another edge rusher is ultimately where they go. And again, that could be a trade spot. Number six to the Jets, I think that's where Marcus Mariota ultimately ends up going. And I don't think he slides past six, either a team, whether it's the Eagles or somebody else, trades up, you know, to get ahead of the Jets or at that number six pick, you know, or the Jets ultimately take Mariota. So I think he goes number six. Number seven, I'm going to go with Vic Beasley going to the Bears. I think he had a great combine. He's definitely moving up. Number eight, the Falcons, you know, they're a little bit tough to project. They could go offensive line or they could look for edge rusher. So I'm going to go Shane Ray out of Missouri. Number nine, the Giants, again, you know, you're talking, you know, pass rusher, offensive line, wide receiver. I think that's going to be a theme, you know, with several of these teams. But Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, I think he may be that number nine pick. And number 10, the Rams, you know, they finally got to do something for Sam Bradford. They thought they were doing something good for him with Tavon Austin out of West Virginia a few years ago. But if Amari Cooper is sitting there at number 10, and he's going to be – Sam Bradford's going to be their quarterback moving forward, they've got to take him. And so I've got him going there at number 10. Although they could go a number of different directions as well.
Yeah. He is DraftTech's Cole Muzio joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. That's an interesting rundown. But, Cole, I got to be honest. As long as you said Jameis Winston going to my beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's all that I needed to hear, because now we can perhaps just keep my fingers crossed that we have a franchise quarterback, something that we haven't had in quite some time. It's going to be outstanding. And like I was saying, Cole, before you came on, and I was telling Fife this, that, you know what, if you're a fan of the NFL, next week's free agency is totally unlike any other free agency in any other professional sport. Guys are signing in, and they're pretty much not leaving out of the facility without getting a contract. So it's going to be fast and heavy, and I definitely look forward to talking in the weeks to come as free agency is going to be fast and heavy. And really, really, again, leading into the NFL draft. So I definitely look forward to talking to you real soon. Cole, let everybody know where they can find everything that you have going on along with DraftTech.com.
Yeah, mainly continue to check out DraftTech.com. We'll be updating the mock drafts pretty regularly through to reflect free agency changes. So continue to check that out. You know, as you said, free agency is going to be very interesting. Could have the highest paid player of all time in Ndamukong Suh. So, and definitely watch that, but continue to check in on DraftTech.com.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Always a pleasure, Cole. Look forward to talking to you down the line.
All right, thanks. Looking forward to it. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Cole Muzio joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Outstanding insight. DraftTech.com. Go to the site. You want to get your fix for your NFL draft and free agency? Go to DraftTech.com because you will not be disappointed whatsoever. 347-324-5839. Fife, your thoughts on Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan now has become he's made the Forbes billionaire list and billionaires. Your thoughts on Michael Jordan. And there's a report that he still makes $100 million a year off of sneakers. How surprised are you about that, Fife?
I'm not surprised at all. My thoughts is, let me hold something, Mike. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not surprised at all. He's always been that businessman. We've seen him grow through the years, and I'm happy for him. That's all I can say.
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, do it while you can, as long as you can. Let's continue to stay with the basketball theme. As I said before, March Madness is right around the corner. And a gentleman that knows a thing or two about a lot of the mid-major schools, I don't hold it against him because he knows a thing or two about the Philadelphia 76ers, and he always brings a great insight. He writes a slam. He's covering high school basketball. He does it all. A man that, again, knows the ins and outs when it comes to basketball, from the high school to college basketball. Jake Fisher joins us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Jake, great to talk to you, my friend. Let's get right to it. March Madness is here, Jake. It's right around the corner. The mid-major conference tournaments are the first up. Which conference should we focus on, Jake?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me, Gerald. Always good to be on the show. With conference play really starting up on Thursday and Friday, I can't believe it's really just this week. The conference I definitely recommend keeping your eyes out on is the Missouri Valley. Obviously, Northern Iowa and Wichita State set the tone there. Two top 15 teams have been battling some of the giants in the country all year long, but those two teams aren't the only guys to keep in mind in that conference. You got Illinois State, Indiana State, Evansville too. It's not just going to be Northern Iowa and Wichita State running away with this thing. It's going to be a competitive being three bids from the Missouri Valley to cut in on who wins that conference tournament.
Yeah, we've known a thing or two about the Missouri Valley Conference, and I believe, again, the one that we've known the most about has been Wichita State, but clearly Northern Iowa, I think, has also been a major player in there as well.
Which mid-major conference could possibly get an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament?
Keeping with the Missouri Valley, they're definitely going to get at least one because Northern Iowa and Wichita State, like Gerald just said, those two teams are definitely deserving of at-larges, even if they don't win their conference tournament. And then you go to the Mountain West, too, and they're going to have a couple of teams as well, Boise State, San Diego State, Colorado State, those three teams right there should all be getting, you know, 10, 11, 12 team looks too at large teams as well. Because we talked about the majors, and Gerald introduced that at the beginning of this. These teams are no longer afraid to go out and travel to the high powers and go play them and beat them in their house on the road. And come this time of the season when the tournament selection committee gets together, they're going to recognize that.
Right.
Yeah, it should be something really interesting to see it really moving forward because, as you mentioned before, they set the tone, they set the table because, again, it starts with their conference tournaments. Looking at mid-majors, because like I said before, every indication showed us in the early stages of this season, college basketball, we saw a lot of mid-majors coming up and really knocking off a lot of the power conference teams and stuff. And clearly, there's a lot of parity that's in college basketball, and it will be ever more apparent in this upcoming NCAA tournament. Which mid-major conference, Jake, has potential NBA prospects that you feel could shine come tournament time?
I mean, Missouri Valley definitely has a lot when you look at Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker at Wichita State and the big guy Seth Hill at Northern Iowa. But I think the best mid-major player in the country right now is R.J. Hunter in the Sun Belt at Georgia State. And I know the Panthers, they just took control of that conference last week. R.J. Hunter is a guy that if he gets in the tournament, he can have a 38-point game if he gets hot. He's a lights-out shooter. So he can also put the ball on the deck and get to the rim too. And if you talk to draft experts around the country, he's definitely considered the top mid-major prospect amongst all guards and forwards. He's a guy I would definitely keep an eye on, especially in a 13 seed, potentially upsetting a 4 seed look.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And there's going to be some guys that's under the radar that's really, really going to shine. Jake Fisher joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Fife Dog, Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839.
which mid-major college coach that could be a hot coaching prospect after the NCAA tournament?
Well, last year I was surprised that Louisiana Tech's Michael White didn't take the Tennessee job. He apparently turned that job down to go back to LA Tech, and here comes LA Tech back as another power team in the Conference USA. If they can get in the tournament and maybe make an upset at a double-digit seed too, sometimes those teams, you can see an 11 and a 12 matchup in the second round against the Sweet 16. LA Tech is a deep team. Again, they have a lot of senior leadership, a lot of experienced veterans on that squad. If LA Tech has another strong showing in the postseason like they have the last couple of years, I expect Michael White to probably have another head coaching offer from another top team in the country.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. How far do you think we could have a mid-major team go this year in the tournament? I mean, you got to remember we had a few years back when my beloved Louisville Cardinals won the championship. They ran into the Wichita State Shockers in the Final Four and beat them. And then if you go back a little bit further, we all understood and introduced the Butler. We also saw George Mason be sort of that last, if you will, mid-major school, make it to the Final Four. Jake, how far this year do you think we could have a mid-major program go?
I think we're going to see at least four in the Sweet 16. I think the 12-5 matchup has really been a historical matchup to look at. But I really expect a couple 13 and 14 seeds to make some noise in the first round. This is a deep, deep field of the majors this year. And I think the top two, again, goes back to the Missouri Valley with you and I and Wichita State. But VCU, you can never count them out. Butler, like you mentioned, they've had another incredible season. And there's a lot of teams right now that are very, very talented that haven't really gotten to show what they can do on a national stage because they weren't afforded the opportunities that some other mid-majors were to play some high powers in non-conference. And therefore, their RPI has been lower. I think we're going to see at least four, maybe even five or six in the Sweet 16. I think you're going to have at least one or two in the Elite Eight as well.
Yeah, should be interesting. He does it all. You like I said, he's a high school covers high school basketball for the Boston Globe, Slam Online, AOL Sports, Liberty Ballers, NCAA for Mid Madness. JakeLewisFisher.com. You check out his website and all the great things. Jake Fisher joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Fife Dog, Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839.
What will be the recipe for a mid-major to win this whole tournament?
I think the recipe is always speeding the pace up and knocking down shots on outside. And go back to even the days of Steph Curry at Davidson, just relentlessly from outside, just knocking down three-pointers left and right. And when when mid-majors really pick up the pace and they create a frenetic environment and they force a lot of turnovers, that's how you get a high-power team and a favorite to start backpedaling and really start to get nervous and collapse under the pressure. That's kind of what you see in terms of just overall in the history, when the double-digit teams and mid-majors come out of nowhere and upset teams, you look at last year when Stephen F. Austin came out from behind and beat VCU in the final minutes. It's all about pushing the tempo and trying to rattle the opponent. I think that's really been the key, and that'll continue to be the key for years to come.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, and I guess more than ever, this is the time of year to really, really get involved. And if you're a basketball fan, this is the perfect time because, like I said before, this is the calm before the storm. Jake, I hope you're getting a lot of rest because I definitely know that we're going to be reaching out to you as much as possible to get the insight, especially leading up to the brackets being out, getting your thoughts and opinions on who you feel we need to watch at, what matchups you like, what matchups you don't like. So, definitely look forward to talking down the line and always appreciate you having you on the show.
Yeah, can't wait, guys. I think it's like 13 days to Selection Sunday, so it's going to be a good one.
It should be outstanding. Appreciate it, Jake.
Thanks, guys.
Jake Fisher joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. It's outstanding time of the year. Outstanding time of the year. JakeLewisFisher.com. Go to his website. He has tremendous insight. Like I said before, he covered high school basketball, NBA. You know, he's all over the place. So he's really clued in, especially on the mid-major schools. And I think it's more important than ever to really figure out that, again, there's so much parity that exists in basketball now on the college level that it'll be very, very difficult to really sit back and overlook some of these mid-majors. I mean, you look back, who would have ever thought that we had Butler be at the level that they're at there? They're at one of the Big East schools. Who would have ever thought a school like a VCU climbs from perhaps the Colonial going into the Atlantic 10? And Shaka Smart, a guy that essentially, between him and Brad Stevens, had their pick of the litter in terms of jobs. And you're talking about the success fights of both of those programs, believe it or not, rather than, yes, they couldn't offer them the major money, the sort of big dollars, if you will, that a lot of the big major powerhouse conferences could. But what the schools ended up doing, and I thought was clearly a smart move on their part, moving their programs out of those sort of mid-major level and elevating them to the elite status of being in a situation where now they can also generate more revenue, but also you're a program that entices college coaches like a Brad Stevens and a Shaka Smart to be able to remain there. Clearly, Stevens left to go to the Boston Celtics, the NBA, but Shaka Smart has stayed there. Surprised that you would see schools do that in terms of being able to keep some of these surprising star powerhouse coaches like a Shaka Smart?
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, if you work for it, flaunt it, go for it, handle your business, and that's exactly what Brad Stevens and Shaka Smart has been able to do. And like you said, they had a bunch of choices where they could have ended up. Of course, Brad Stevens went to the NBA, and I'm looking forward to see how long Shaka Smart will decide to stay at VCU, or where will he go after that? He could have went to NC State a while back. Maybe North Carolina will come calling his name. Who knows? But I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's been great. And I think it's been good to really for those programs to be able to say, hey, look, we don't want to go from from a relevant program to a non-relevant program. Thus, they did what they needed to do and moved the program up, and now you're talking about stronger recruiting, more notoriety for the program. And those little things right there, I think, are more enticing to keep a guy like a Shaka Smart there. And I think the key thing will be how long he remains there and what type of jobs will he turn down. I believe he's been mentioned for a lot of the major jobs and being able to stay there. I don't think he would have stayed there if they would have remained in the Colonial and been a part of that. I think that was something they needed to do. Let's switch gears right now. Our next guest is up. I'm really interested to see the show, and it's a fascinating individual, and she's done by far some amazing things, and it's an honor and a privilege to have her here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. I want to make sure I get the name right. Janisa Adams-Ginyard joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Hey, hey.
Now, Janisa, how you doing? This is Gerald Brown, the legendary Fife Dog, the Tribe Called Quest, Muddy Morphosis. Did I butcher the name or no?
No, you said it perfect. Yes.
Thank you. See,
hey
now
guys.
You make me feel good. You make me feel good. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's get right to it. Talk
Thanks
about
for
the reality
me.
Show. Oh, it's our pleasure. Talk about the reality TV show on Spike TV called Coaching Bad that you're a part of. And I want to ask you this. How much has the experience changed your outlook on coaching in youth sports?
Okay. I'm glad that you specified youth sports because I think coaching is different on the different levels, like youth sports, high school, college level. You know what I mean? I feel like there's different levels. As for me, I coached on the junior college level. So basically you're an adult, you know, so there's certain things that I think you might be able to get away with because you are coaching quote unquote adults versus our youth athletes, you know, the 13 and unders. But as far as my view on how things have changed, I still believe that there's a certain level of intensity that you need to coach. But I do think you should try to figure out what your athlete wants to do with that sport. Are they just there just to kill time, or are they trying to make it to the professional level? Because that might change your intensity level. You know what I mean? Like, if you just coaching kids because this is their after-school program and they ain't really trying to do nothing, then, you know, tone it down. But if you want – if your athletes actually are trying to be, like, pros and try to make it to that next level where they're competing for their country or, you know, getting, you know, a six-figure check, there's some intensity that needs to come with that because you got to instill in them discipline. You need to instill in them accountability. You know what I mean? So that's how I feel.
and talk about the coaching bag because I know it's you, Ray Lewis. You know, you're working with Ray Lewis on this show. Talk about the TV show, Coaching Bag.
Yes. So Coaching Bag, it airs every Sunday at 10 p.m. on Spike TV. And Ray Lewis is the host. He is also teamed with Dr. Conti, who is an anger management specialist. And they take myself and eight other coaches through their anger management program. The issue is that there's a bottom line anger issue somewhere. So they try to figure out and assess where this anger is coming from, right? And then once they figure that out, they implement, you know, changes. You know, how can we change this? And then after the change, then they kind of test the change, if that makes sense. So it's almost like a three-part program, assessing the anger, trying to change it, and then, you know, putting that change to test. Ray Lewis is absolutely amazing. I can see how he got his, you know, Baltimore Ravens, you know, ready to go play because the dude is just very inspiring. He's super inspiring, like super intense. He has a very good way with words. I mean, he motivated me. He did show me that I can finesse how I speak to my athletes because, you know, I told him, you know, and they show this in, like, I think episode 2 where I say, you know, everybody needs to be told off. Everybody needs to be, you know, told when they're doing something wrong or held accountable. He's like, you know, Janisha, but there's a way to do things. And my way is not working. Me cussing you out and yelling at you is not working. So I need to, you know, finesse my ways. Still tell you, but just finesse it a little bit.
Yeah, well said. Janisha Adams, again, you're joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. It's a Spike TV show, Coaching Bag, every Sunday night, 8 p.m. on Spike TV.
10 p.m.
10 p.m. I'm sorry, 10 p.m.
10 p.m., yes, 10 p.m. on Spike.
Okay, for those that don't know, you're a professional wrestler for the Women of Wrestling Entertainment in Las Vegas. Number one, how did you get into wrestling? And two, since Lakers Jeannie Buss is the co-owner, what insight can you give us on what's going on with the Lakers?
Come on, Janisha. Come on. Don't sugarcoat the truth. Come on. We want to know with 411. Come on now.
Okay, so, yes, I am with Women of Wrestling. It's the largest all-female wrestling promotion in the world, co-owned by Jeannie Buss. And my character's name is Frost, which is why if you see me, you'll see I have white in my hair. My whole outfit's white. Like it's. So I got into the wrestling from my extensive athletic background and my stunt background because I'm a stunt woman. And, you know, so that's how I got into the wrestling. As far as the Lakers, I don't have a clue. You know, when I hear Lakers, all I think is I'm not even a Laker. Like, that's not my team. Like, my team is the New York Knicks.
Oh, but, Lord, she go from bad to worse. But then I know you could give us some insight on what's going on with the Knicks because you know what? Jeannie's fiancé is Phil Jackson. Come on now.
Yeah,
come on, Frost.
I know.
Come on,
I
Frost.
I have no insight on the Lakers. You know, Kobe is old. I mean, I can tell you that. Dude, 36.
We asked about the Knicks, though. What you know about the Knicks, though? Come on, Janisha. You sound like a politician right now. You dancing around that question.
I bleed blue and orange, you know, so there's nothing
that I can say. You've been doing a lot of bleeding. Wow. You and Fife. Fife been doing a lot of bleeding too.
That's hilarious. you know, I'm praying for my East Coast. You know, I pray that we get back to our 94 days, you know, when we actually won, like, the Eastern Conference championships and stuff. So I always am optimistic about that. I'm sorry?
Yeah, you have to throw that out there. Fife.
Bring out the ball boy for the Knicks. Don't let them fool you, all that trash he talks.
Yes. yes. You
I
know what?
Give
I
you
used
insight
to be
on the Lakers. Here go to insight. Yeah. They will not make it to the playoffs. They're last.
I used
There's
to be
insight.
A ball boy for the Knicks back in that late 80s and stuff. So I remember that. So Fife want to throw that out there. You know, and
okay.
I mean, again, I left them. But see, I woke up, Fife. I definitely woke up, and I understand how atrocious they are. And speaking of atrocious, 124-86 they lost tonight to the Sacramento Kings. But, again,
really?
We're not going ahead and poison the conversation with that. You know,
there's
Janisha,
still hope. At least the Knicks fans are loyal.
Yeah, that's called insanity, Janisha. Let's call it what it is. It's insanity. That's all it is. In preparation for this interview, I was really taken back by some of the stuff that you have been able to accomplish, and I thought it's fascinating because, you know, last month we celebrated Black History Month, and really just to look at some of the things that you've been able to do, I found it so fascinating. Talk about what it meant for you to be a part of the first all-African-American U.S. bobsled duo and being a part of that.
Yeah. That was actually awesome because I had to do my research to figure that out. For people that don't know, bobsledding is a winter sport. you know, and I had to throw that out because some people still don't know what bobsledding is, despite Cool Runnings. So I was the brakeman for my sled. And for women, it's a two-person sled. For men, they have two and four. So you'll have a driver and, you know, the three people. But for women, it's just two, driver and brakeman. And I was very fortunate to be in a sled where my driver was also African-American. And, you know, that is history because we were the first all-black U.S. female bobsled duo. And she was a very good driver. Her name is Jamia Jackson. So shout out to Jamia. She had been doing, you know, she's awesome. I just have to say, I was very privileged. I was very blessed to have the opportunity to compete for my country internationally and definitely was very blessed to have the opportunity to be the brakeman for her because she had been doing bobsledding way longer than I had. But, you know, bobsledders, you don't really, like, train to be a bobsledder because bobsledders come from various athletic disciplines, you know, backgrounds. But a lot of them are track athletes, and, you know, I was a track athlete. I did hurdles and heptathlon, so we tend to just gravitate towards that brakeman spot. And I was very blessed to have that opportunity, yeah. And I do try to mention it when I can, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely we need to acknowledge that, and that's something that's very powerful. But I got to ask you, Janisha, was y'all in the bobsled when y'all was going down there? Were y'all talking about, girl, don't be swinging too fast, going to break my nails, I got to get my head done? Were y'all having conversations in there to sort of take your minds off everything? What were some of the conversations y'all be having when y'all in the bobsled?
You know, it's funny. There are no conversations. There haven't been any conversations that was going on in my sled verbally. Now, in my mind, I was like, Lord, please don't let this girl tip this sled over. Please don't, because, you know, they're so thin. I mean, they're very heavy, but as far as, like, padding, it's thin. Mm. So you feel everything. Before you do your race, you have, like, an ice walk, and, you know, your driver and you go down, and she has already probably memorized the track, so she knows, and she's telling you, okay, we got curve one, curve two, okay, three is going to be really hard, you know. So I'm remembering what she's telling me, and so I can feel that. I don't see any of the race. My head is down the entire race until we stop, and I pump the brakes for us to stop. But I don't see anything, so I have my head down. We're not talking. I'm literally praying, Lord Jesus, please don't let her tip this sled over. Please let this be a smooth ride.
It's a very, very, again, it's like you said, it's a dangerous sport, but, I mean, it's fascinating. So I do imagine that, again, it's all level focused.
Yes, yes, it's awesome. So, you know, and I'm half Jamaican, so I had a little bit of that cool running spirit in me when I was being in that sled, too.
The show
I
is breaking. Spike TV's coaching TV show, Coaching Bad. Janisha Adams getting you joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, 347-324-5839.
Hey.
So, as a stunt woman, what would you say is the best stunt that you've ever performed?
Okay. The best stunt I've ever performed would probably be. Okay, can I give two? Like, can I tie? Like, I have two best stunts.
Go ahead.
So,
we'll give you that. Come on, Janisha.
Okay, okay. So my first one would be when I was set on fire and I had to fall into a swimming pool. I think that by far was my best stunt. It looked great on camera, and it was, like, my favorite stunt, too.
Wow.
I'm scared of you. I'm scared. Straight up.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one stunt I knew I was going to survive because, you know, fire needs, like, oxygen. So once I hit that water, I knew I was going to be immediately extinguished. You know what I mean? So there was no – I had no worry. I you know, I knew I was going to survive that.
No, I'm not having it.
Yeah. Now, you know, because, again, you've been in a lot of TV. You've been in TV shows, a couple movies and stuff like that. And as you mentioned, you're also a professional wrestler. Before we let you get on out of here, what's the difference between Frost and Janisha?
Oh, okay. So I would say, okay, there's not much difference between Frost and
Janisha. Oh, come on,
Janisha.
Come on.
No, there's not much. But I'm going to say the real difference would probably be is that Janisha is really goofy and funny, and Frost is very serious. Like, Frost is, like, hardcore intense. Like, takes no – I don't know if I can swear, but Frost takes no crap all the time. She's like that. Versus Janisha is super funny, goofy, you know. So I would say that would be the – major difference between Frost and Janisha.
Yeah.
Frost rarely laughs.
Frost, that's because Frost set himself on fire and jumped in the pool.
Frost is rarely laughing. Okay?
That is crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really interesting. Hey, listen, Janisha, we really, really appreciate you jumping on the line with us and sharing some insight on some of the many of the great things that you have done. Listen, congrats on the TV show Coaching Bad Sunday nights at 10 p.m. on Spike TV. The women of wrestling and doing that as well as being a stunt woman and really just, again, being an inspiration and really doing all the things that you have done and really very inspiring and very positive. I want you to do us a favor. Come back on the show with us during the course of the year, you know, before we get into summer after everything is over with Coaching Bad, and come back on the show with us and keep us abreast on some of the other things that you have coming on, going on, and I'll come back on the show and talk some sports with us.
For sure, will do. I have two projects that have already been completed, and so I would love to come back and tell you about those things. Both of them are adventure shows. My middle name is Adventure. So
wow.
I would love to do that. But you can always follow me on Twitter at Hollywood Lady J. That would be Hollywood LADY and J, just the letter J. But I'm so thankful that you guys had me on. I try to be inspiring and positive. I live by the motto of can or you can't, you're right. So it's all about just speaking stuff into existence and just going for it and just doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I must say that, again, you know, we're following you on Twitter, and we got to love your I guess, your Twitter Abby, again, up on there. So, I mean, you're doing it all. I mean, it's a good look.
Yeah.
It's a good look. I'm not mad at you all, but again, really continue success in all that you do, and do us a favor, come back on the show and let us know when everything transpires. You can talk about those different projects you have in, taking place. I would love to have you back on, and hopefully we'll be here to help you through those tough times as you start to believe that you think the Knicks are going to get some people in free agency, only to realize they're getting bums. Okay, so we're going to be here. We're going to walk you through the process, and it's going to be therapeutic for you and Fife, because I want y'all to make sure you stop drinking that Kool-Aid.
Funny, I promise you, I'm saying this right now. I promise you the Knicks will have a better record than the Lakers. I promise you.
Janisha, I have a better chance of becoming a stunt double, okay?
He has a better chance of Tampa Bay winning the Super Bowl. That's what he
Watch
is.
Your mouth there, see? There you go with those low blows, see? It's always this guy here with these low blows. Come on
that
now.
That is hilarious.
Hey, Janisha, thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you down the line.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. The outstanding one, Janisha Adams-Ginya, joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Make sure you check out the show, Spike TV, Sunday nights, 10 p.m., Coaching Bad. Check it out. It's really good, really good. Got a chance to see an episode or so. And, man, Fife, she's done a lot. And just doing the research and then going from, you know, an unbelievable athlete and, you know, she's, again, you know, a wrestler and, you know, all that stuff. And then as well as being a stunt woman, she don't take no crap, man. I mean, you know, you got to be kind of scared with those. Huh?
I'm still stuck on getting lit on fire and then having to jump in the pool. That's enough for me, yeah.
So it's not too much it's not too much that a man can really do to impress a woman like that. You know, it's like, you know.
For real. Good point.
You know, it's not too much. I mean, again, that's like, oops, yeah, I've been there and done that. Been there and done that, we got to have a round of applause because Floyd Money Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao have finally, F-I-N-A-L-L-Y, have put their names on a contract, and they're going to get it on May 2nd. Fife, surprise, how surprised are you that they were able to finally make this fight happen?
I'm absolutely surprised because being that it took so long, one, and then Pacquiao getting knocked out not too long ago, I thought there wouldn't be a chance in HELL that the fight was going to happen, but I'm glad that it's finally going to take place.
Yeah, I'm really happy. But Fife, you know what? There's been a lot of conversation that people said, "Hey, it's probably happened a little too late." I don't know if I'm going to believe in that because I think what happens is we want the fight so bad that people are sitting up here saying it's okay because essentially they're still at the top of their game. But realistically, is this fight really too late?
I thought it was, like I said earlier, with Pacquiao being knocked out, I thought it was too late. But now that everything has come to fruition, I'm actually looking forward to it because – at the end of the day, there's still really two great fighters, and especially with Mayweather still being undefeated. So I'm looking forward to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, and keep in mind, that day, May 2nd, it's going to be unbelievable. You have the Kentucky Derby taking place. You'll have the NBA playoffs. You'll have the final day of the NBA NFL draft. Well, really, it's not. That's just really window dressing. So I really don't even include that. But you have NBA playoffs. You have the Yankees and Red Sox, I think, taking place that weekend. It's a sports bonanza, an unbelievable sports bonanza. You're probably going to have a lot of parties, all the stuff that's taking place. But both fighters will get together in L.A. March 11th for a press event. And I think this is unprecedented because they're not going to do the press tour. You know, I don't really see that. But if anything, I don't think this fight really needs the whole gamut of press tours and stuff because, like you said before, Fife, their track record speaks for itself. And I don't think there's any additional hype. I'm very happy that they're going to take one day in L.A., March 11th, and really have a press event. And then after that, let's get back to getting ready for the fight. Agree or disagree, Fife, that this fight doesn't really need any additional hype?
It doesn't. I totally agree that it doesn't need additional hype. We've been waiting long enough. There's no need to drag it out with all of that hoopla. Let's just put the gloves on and get to slapping. Straight up.
Yeah, let's get it on. Let's get it on. What will this fight do for both fighters, Fife? What do you think this fight will do?
If either one wins, it'll just showcase what a great fighter they've been, what a great fighter they'll always be. They'll definitely go down in history as two of the greatest who have ever done it. If Pacquiao wins, okay, same thing. But if Mayweather wins, I don't even think he has to fight anymore after this, to be honest.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think his legacy is cemented as the greatest. I hate to say the greatest ever because, I mean, it's so difficult, especially in the game of sport of boxing, to compare eras. Mm-hmm. Clearly, it wasn't a lot of the marquee names out there, if you will, that you had your Sugar Ray Leonards and the fighters before him. But he will go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time simply because he did not dodge anybody. He fought a lot of the fighters, and he was really at the top of his game. And to leave out of this game, if he's fortunate enough, on top and go out undefeated, I think that speaks volumes. But I think that if he loses this fight, or if anything, if this fight is really close, I think, Fife, we're going to have it all set up. If this fight is very exciting, I think that it will already be in the works for them to be able to put this thing and have a rematch to close out Floyd's career. You know, he'll still owe one fight, I believe, with he'll still owe one fight to Showtime. And I'm looking at it this way, that what better way to be able to close out his career, if based upon this fight, if they have an unbelievable fight, and he wins, to give Manny Pacquiao a rematch and basically say that this is the swan song, if you will, of his career, and thus he moves on and retires undefeated. Agree or disagree?
I totally agree. There's nothing left to be said. I mean, he'll go down as one of the greatest, but if he wins, can you imagine? Can you imagine him making it rain after that fight?
Wow. It will be bonkers, and I can just imagine how much money do you think we predict this fight will generate for Las Vegas alone? Because, I mean, Fife, people are going to flood Las Vegas that might not even go to the fight, but just to be in the atmosphere and the ambiance. And D-Unit hit me up a couple of weeks ago, and once the fight was officially announced, D-Unit was saying, hey, he wanted to go out there to the fight. Regardless of you're able to go to the fight, but just to be in the atmosphere, I think that is something that's monumental. It's unbelievable. But how much money you feel that this fight will generate for Vegas alone?
Well, I think it's going to be in the billions, man, for the simple fact that we've waited so long for it. So whether you're watching at home, whether you're watching at a sports bar across the country, or whether you're there for the action itself, it's going to generate not millions, but billions.
Yeah, it's going to generate a ton of money. It's going to be ugly. And it should be an entertaining fight. As we get closer, we're going to give out our predictions and really get into it. Fife, what's your bottom line for tonight?
My bottom line for tonight is God bless the life of Anthony Mason. I'm very thankful for what he was able to bring to the New York Knickerbockers, as well as the other teams that he played for. But obviously, Knickerbockers are close to home as far as I'm concerned. And you know what I mean? He got us to Game 7 in the 94 Finals. We didn't win it, but I love what he was able to bring to the table for us. And, you know, you have to take into consideration how hard he worked to get where he, to get where he was. And just off that alone, nothing but respect. God be with him and his family, you know what I mean?
Well said, well said. I echo those same sentiments, and I said this before on the show on SiriusXM NBA Radio on Saturdays and Sundays. I said, you know what, this is a time where, if anything, this is a wake-up call to James Dolan. And understand that, you know what, these are players like Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, Mark Jackson. You know, these guys need to be embraced. Because let's be honest, what you're putting out there is putrid, it's ugly, it's pathetic, you name it, it's all associated with nothing positive whatsoever. And yet the fact is, we do not have guys like a Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, welcomed and embraced back into the Knick family. I think that it's important that we acknowledge these guys before they get further up in age and thus leave this earth. Because at the end of the day, you haven't been able to replace these guys. And these guys like a Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason epitomize what New Yorkers are all about. Gritty, hardworking, and of the people. And these are two guys that were of the people. And it's really unfortunate. It was his time to go. You know, but I think definitely he's gone, but definitely not forgotten. My bottom line also is I tried to watch this documentary on Kobe Bryant, this Kobe Muse. I respect Kobe Bryant. I love Kobe Bryant. I love his game. I respect what he's been able to do. But come on. Come on. Come on, Kobe. Let's just stop the charade. And Fife, put the call in and tell Kobe to stop it, please, Fife. Let's stop. He's talking about he's not retiring after next year. I don't. Come on, Fife. It's enough. Please tell him to sit down.
Why do you think he's not retiring after next year?
Well, he said that. I mean, I think he was on Jimmy Kimmel, and he said, oh, Grantland, he said that he's not retiring at the end of this, at the end of the next year. He's not going to retire. I mean, Fife, Father Time catches up for everybody. There's no need, Fife. There's no need at all. We need to start realizing that, again, you know what? The great ones, it's hard for them to leave the game. And I've always said, athletes die of two deaths. You know, once their career is over, it's a painful, painful death. And I'm hoping somewhere along those lines that he inevitably is able to realize that. But I think that, again, it'll be very, very interesting how much he holds hostage, that being the Los Angeles Lakers front office and moving forward. It's been a great, great show. I'd like to thank Janisha, really coming on here. Janisha Adams-Ginyard joining us from Spike TV's show, Coaching Bad. You can catch that on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. on Spike TV. I'd like to thank Jake Fisher for joining us, giving us the 411 on March Madness. Cole Muzio of DraftTech.com. Last but definitely not least, Vashti Hurt and the Vashti Report. And most importantly, we'd like to thank you for listening to the Bottom Line Sports Show whenever you do. For Fife Dog, I'm Gerald Brown. Thank you so much. Fife, we do it all over again next Tuesday night. The Bottom Line Sports Show is out. And we say what, Fife? We're out. Bottom Line Sports Show.